All right, so you don't have to raise your hands, but how many of you remember the television show Lifestyles of the Rich and Famous? Okay. For those of you who are nodding and smiling, then you know the premise of the show was that each week the host showcased the extravagant lifestyles of famous actors and musicians, artists, business moguls, athletes. As the show's introduction put it, discover how life's winners live, love, and spend their fortunes. Host Robin Leach visited homes and vacation homes of people like Michael Jordan, Tony Bennett, Sylvester Stallone, to bring you his signature champagne wishes and caviar dreams. For those of you born of a different generation, this is the 80s version of MTV Cribs. It seems that every human society has been fascinated by the lives of the rich and famous, and Jesus' world was no different. In the Jewish community in Jerusalem, people would have gathered together in the temple, and they would have watched with a mixture of awe and envy as the scribes came to worship. The scribes were the wealthy elite of Jerusalem. They wore the best and most expensive clothing. They were the kind of people that the mayor would cross the street to come up to and shake hands with. They went to lavish parties. They always got upgraded to first class, and they always sat in box seats. And when they donated to the temple, they didn't just write a check like all the rest of us, right? They went and bought one of those obnoxiously large presentation checks, right? And they got a big marker and they wrote their donation in really large black ink. And then they went to the priest and in front of everybody in the temple, they presented it to it. And of course, photos are welcomed as I do this, right? They were the kind of people who would leak to the tabloids how much they donated to hurricane relief, just so we would all say, oh my gosh, Caiaphas is such a down-to-earth person. I mean, he really cares about his community, right? But Jesus knew a secret about these scribes that they didn't want anybody to know. The truth is, they weren't actually very generous people. Sure, the scribes put large sums of money in the offering plate, but if you looked at their budget, they were really just giving their leftovers. After they had spent money on fancy trips and expensive clothing, after they had had their fill of champagne and caviar, after they bought the new Rolls Royce, that's when they wrote that big fat check. At best, they gave calculated gifts. They figured out just how much they needed to give to pass the minimum threshold of what God had asked people to give. In the Old Testament, the standard for giving that all should strive for was a tithe, or 10% of a person's gross income. Of course, the scribes, being legal scholars, would search for any loophole they could find for ways they might not have to give that much. Because for them, giving to God in the worshiping community or to charity, it was optional. And it was optional after all of your necessary personal expenses had been made. Now, why they considered personal jets and a new Corvette part of their necessary personal expenses, Jesus had a bit of a debate about, but that was their thinking. See, Jesus here is not attacking wealth in and of itself. He's addressing those who worship their wealth. You see their wealth as something that is an end to itself, not a means of helping others, of building healthier communities. If we're just giving to keep up appearances, Jesus says, that's not actually generosity. It's not sharing our blessings with others. It's not even the kind of generosity that is meaningful for the person who gives or the person who receives. We don't really get any sense of joy from it because it's just an afterthought. Now, throughout his ministry, Jesus would warn his disciples about the dangers of seeking power and popularity instead of serving others. He warned them about thinking more about what they could get instead of what they could give. And so when Jesus sent his disciples out to do their own preaching ministry, he prohibited them from taking up offerings at the end to accumulate money for themselves. They weren't able to take the best seats at the banquets. Don't use your preaching as a ticket to dine with the stars or meet with the president, Jesus would say. Your priority should always be to care for the poor, and the needy, and the oppressed. It's about this time in the teaching that Jesus watches a poor widow come and put 2 copper coins in the offering plate. Now, our English translations tell us that it was worth about a penny. It's just trying to give us the example. This is probably the smallest donation that came in that day. The only way this widow could have given any less is to only have put in 1 copper coin instead of 2. She made her gift with no fanfare. Nobody pulled out their cell phones to take photos of this gift. As we look at the reading, it doesn't appear that anybody noticed the widow making this donation except for Jesus. Jesus takes note of an extraordinary gift that's been made. It's extraordinary because the widow hasn't given from her overflow, from her surplus. She's given from the center of her budget. She has given everything she had to support the work of God through the people of God. Now, to be clear, Jesus' lesson here today is not stop paying your mortgage and give all your money to the church. Of course, on the other side of the thing, he's not saying if you put in at least a penny today, you've been as generous as everybody, right? Jesus is coming to the end of his earthly ministry. This is the last set of teaching in Mark that he will do before his passion. His mind has already headed towards what will happen in less than a week. He'll give his life away for the sake of others. Jesus is reminding his disciples of a deeper lesson that he has shared in countless ways throughout his ministry. And that's to experience life and life to the full, to experience true joy and meaning in our lives, we must give all of ourselves away to living and loving like Jesus. We can't hold back. We can't put it as a side project. I'll forgive people like Jesus when I get around to it. I'll help someone like Jesus wants me to help them when I feel like it. That's not the kind of life that Jesus calls us to, because the generosity that he speaks of comes in many forms. Our story today, it certainly is about finances, but it's also in the ways in which we devote our time and energy, what we give our lives to. And so when I was thinking about this story, I thought about the children and youth of Vienna Baptist here. And here's why. Let me explain. For those of you who don't know, every year we have an annual part of our rhythms as a church where we make public commitments to support the mission and ministry of the church by pledging how much we'll give here to support our preschool ministries or our after-school mentoring or retreats and prayer groups, and all these things. And so many of you give generously, and it's amazing. I'm always astounded by the generosity of this church. But your tithes are not the ones that I'm always warm my heart, okay? It's the kids. You may not know this. We have a lot of our children who actually make pledges every year, right? And they're not pledging from their salaries or their retirement plans. They're pledging from whatever small allowance they may get or from whatever odd jobs they do during the week. And they fill out one of those cards aside from what mom and dad do. When we do missions offerings for hurricane relief, you have kids that come with boxes with spare change they've dug out of sofas with money they've collected from elsewhere, and that's the donations that they give, right? That's awesome. It's truly incredible. In a little while, we're going to celebrate our graduates who are... most of them are leaving high school. They're about to go off to college. They've been generous in their time and talent over the years here at Vienna Baptist, some of whom we're going to celebrate. They've led summer camps for inner city youth at CityGate. They've done Eagle Scout projects out on our playground for the preschool. They've been ushering and praying, leading worship in all kinds of ways. I could give you an entire 45-minute sermon just outlining all the ways our graduates have been generous in their lives in and through the church here. And what I love about their generosity is when I talk to them about why they did what they did, I've never heard any one of them say, well, mom and dad made me. Right? Now, moms and dads, you can grin. I know that you are very good at encouraging positive behavior, right? You model it and encourage it. But when it comes down to my question of why, they talk about how good it feels, how meaningful it is to help someone else, how much joy and meaning they've derived from that. I talk about how following Jesus means, in any way we can, to do our best to share the love of God with others. And that can be a fun way of living, right? And this is the heart of Jesus' message for us today. We discover true joy and meaning in our lives when we start living in such a way that we see every opportunity around us as a chance to give of our lives, of our hearts, of our love, of our kindness, of our grace, to make a difference for someone else. What the scribes really suffer from is a condition of the soul, not a condition of their pocket. They give out of obligation, out of a sense of I have to, or of a keeping up with the Joneses. It's a very different than when we give because we're really trying to love like Jesus loved. It's only when we stop counting the cost of how much time we're going to give up on a Saturday for a mission project, or how we're going to impact our bottom line by helping hurricane relief or flood relief, that we begin to discover the true joy that Jesus is talking about. It's then that we discover new life and life to the full. And so today, it's worth thinking about what are the ways that maybe in your life, in the past 6 months, you've contributed your 2 copper coins to the work of God in and through the church. Maybe you didn't think it was very much, but you've done a great deal. Maybe you donated to our summer activity bags that'll go help kids keep up their learning skills over the summer. Maybe you volunteered this morning in the nursery, or you taught a Sunday school class. Maybe you're getting ready to volunteer for vacation Bible school. Maybe you've been donating generously to help support our missions and ministries. Maybe you just helped a neighbor or a stranger on the sidewalk this week. These are great moments that we should reflect on and take notice of. And when we see them in others, we should have those eyes like Jesus to be able to name and celebrate someone's generosity around us. Because generosity first begins by saying thanks, by celebrating. And so may we be a people who always give generously to God from the best of who we are as we seek to live out the gospel life. And may we always generously invest in our young people as they grow here, as they learn here, as they lead here, and as they go out to be the people God has called them to be, to do the things that God has called them to do, and most importantly, to go and change the world. This is the good news today. Amen.